cruelty.
To the Church of Mavis, everybody. It's Saturday night. That's right. It's been a long, wild week for me and Guy. First off, I wanted to mention that there's a companion interview that is kind of like connected to this interview tonight. And Joe helped us post it on the archives tonight. It's by a radio show called Mind Cemetery. You can find it on the archives. It's up there now. And the host, Chip and Nicole Plesher, make sure I'm saying that right. I think I am. Yeah, that's right on. But basically, that interview was an interview done with me and Guy regarding the fall of Frogno and Paratopia and Paracast. Now, Philip Imbrogno was busted wide open by a gentleman named Lance Moody, who basically researched Philip Imbrogno's background and found out he was lying about everything pretty much that had anything to do with his education. From, he said he went to MIT. He even wore MIT t-shirts and pictures in the back of his books by Lilwen Publishing. And basically, Lance Moody busted Philip Imbrogno wide open, and he's been revealed as a con man of sorts. He recently did a book with the lovely Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who I consider a friend of the show. She has renounced him. She doesn't have anything to do with him anymore. It's really hurt his publishing. Lilwen, I'm sure, got smacked by it as well. But basically, the book they did was for The Gin. Rosemary's been on the show. Luckily, Philip's never been on our show. Thank God. I thought about it, which is what's so bad. I mean, even if he's been on your show, it doesn't necessarily make your show terrible unless you're hypocritical jerks like the people at Paratopia, which we'll get into that in a second. But basically, Philip Imbrogno was busted wide open, and he has left ufology. He's gone. He's headed for the hills. Yes, Angelia Joyner, who listens to the Church of Mavis because she's a groovy mama-o. He did. Rosemary Ellen Guiley did. Hey, Rosemary, I'm not used to looking at this chat room. I have wireless now, so it's like it distracts, but not in a bad way. I just have to get used to it. But yeah, she did a book with him called The Vengeful Degen, and he helped her write it. And basically she found out he was a flop horse pony and pretending to be a big stallion, and she dropped his ass. So he kicked him to the curb. And she's a sweet woman, very nice. She'll recover fine. But basically, how this ties in with our guests tonight, let me mention who our guests are, because I've been saying in the chat room over and over, but not everybody's in the chat room tonight. We have our friend in Britain who wakes up at 4 a.m. and smokes a doobie and listens to us. Max Snellick's in the house. That's right. He's listening right now. But anyway, tonight's guests are Stan and Lisa Romanek in a show called Married to the Universe, His and Hers, Alien Contactees. And I would also like to add, this is Lisa's first radio appearance. And also as a subtitle of the show, The Fall of Philip Imbrogno and the Hypocrisy of Fruitopia. Of course, Fruitopia is Paratopia. Now let me tell the story about how the Romaneks fit into this on some small level. Basically, a long time ago when I used to do chat room interviews, with people would come to the chat room at the front of the website, which is now thechurchofmavis.com, and it was like a press conference, and hundreds of people would come there, and we would do press-style interviews where there was no audio, and it was kind of like AOL old-school days. And Stanton Friedman came there, Nick Pope, Lloyd Pye, Stan Romanek, all sorts of people came there and did interviews with us. I used to do them with Jeremy Vianney a long time ago. Well, one day, Stan was doing an interview with me, and Jeremy Vianney comes there and goes crazy, insulting me and Stan and the audience, and basically alluding that Stan is not telling the truth about his experiences, with no evidence whatsoever. Some wild story about Jeff Ritzman doing photo analyst this or that, but not really going into it. And basically alluded that we were giving platforms to people who were not genuine. Well, basically me and Jeremy Vianney had a giant fallout. And the fallout happened after Paratopia tried to get me to merge my website with Paratopia and drop the name Mavis and call it Paratopia. And basically we said no. And then they started berating and acting bizarre because they knew I was going to do a radio show, and I guess they were kind of upset about competition. Well, anyway, basically they attacked me, and they were very foul and rude and just asshats. Now, if you want to hear the whole detail of the story, you know, sometime go to the Ark and to me and Guy doing the Mind Cemetery interview, and we go into this in more detail because I don't want to take up the whole show talking about this. I want to get straight to the Romaneks. But to make a long story short, Philip Imbrogno is their golden boy. He's been on their show 3 or 4 times, and Jeremy Vianney basically worships him like he lets out golden turds. So basically what has happened is, the thing that they accused me and Stan of with no evidence besides being asshats just happened to them with evidence. Philip Imbrogno, their golden boy, busted wide open with evidence of being a con man, and they provided a platform for this con man. So basically, to make a long story short, the karma shark has risen and eaten their very fleshy bodies and souls. So on that note, Guy, do you have anything to say? Anything you want to add?
No. I think, just be aware that interview, I haven't been allowed to drop the F-bomb on this show, you know, for quite a while, and I kind of make up for it on this show. So it's definitely rated R, and we go all over the place with stuff. Me and Jeff just kind of let loose on, you know, the whole scene in general. And, you know, all these people that, you know, loved Philip and considered him a friend and, you know, they probably barbecued with him. You know, these people just basically threw him away. They just threw him away. So basically all his work that he's done has just, you know, been thrown out the window. Everything that he's done with Hynek and everything, it's over with. You know, so he may be back, in a few months, there's a whole group of people in the UFO community, I guess, that are very forgiving and stuff like that. So, you know, so maybe he'll be back. Maybe he can eat some crow and explain himself. You know, I understand that people do that sort of thing to get their foot in the door, maybe. But I guess he's been riding that pretty high. I mean, he plasters it. He, you know, plasters it everywhere. So, yeah, I feel bad for him, actually.
You know? Well, the thing that was so bad is Jeremy was like, let's give him a few months to straighten it out, and then as the crap hit the fan more, they threw him under the bus in like a few days.
Oh yeah.
And I would also like to add about Mind Cemetery. They don't always they do really serious shows, I believe, on Monday, and then like Thursdays they kind of let loose and do whatever they want sort of thing. So every one of their shows is not a bunch of cussing. I just want to verify that. It's just all of us have personal stakes in this story, so we got all angry on that show, and it came out like psycho. But, oh yeah, just a little bit of background, about two more minutes here, and we'll start with our guest. So far since we've done the Mind Cemetery show, Alfred Lindbergh from UFO Magazine has praised it highly, given it, said good things about it. Which surprised me because he hates me.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't hate you.
All right. Paul Campbell wrote a letter to the host of Mind Cemetery and said basically that me and Guy Weddle are the scourge of ufology. I hate Paul Campbell, so I really don't care what he says.
We are. I'm Paul Kimball's never had an experience. He's writing Stamp Tales. He made a good movie, okay? But other than that, he hasn't had any firsthand experience, so he's just, you know, he's just an idiot, as far as I'm concerned.
You know what he said? He said he doesn't understand the alien beings are never going to come to someone like me and Guy, which is a complete, we've both had experiences. So he basically judged us and said that we're not worthy to have paranormal encounters with anything whatsoever in his little hate mail.
Well, that's fun.
So, you know, he can kiss us.
I'll just, we'll just, listen, we'll just go to war with Paul Kimball. That's fine. You know, we'll just, we'll just make his life hell. I'm all for that, dude.
And, yeah, I'm trying to think who else. There was a lot of stuff going on about this interview. That's a big buzz with that Mind Cemetery interview, so check it out. Well, let's get to the Romanex, because like I said, I don't want to take up the whole show talking about this when you can just listen to that interview, which I consider a companion piece to this interview to find out everything else. So let's get to the Romanex. Meet the Romanex. All right, let me stop. Hey, Stan and Lisa. Are you there?
How's it going?
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Guy.
Hi.
Hello.
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah.
All right, Stan.
And Lisa.
When I talked to Stan about this whole story, he basically said that he found it amusing that the karma shark swam around and bit his enemies on the arse, right, Stan?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's sad that people do that, but they do. I mean, the UFO phenomena has enough to deal with as it is to have to put up with this kind of stuff, you know. And I always tell people that's what makes my case so different. I can back up what I say. I mean, I've got the police reports. I've got the evidence. And I'm not going to tell anybody I'm a graduate. I'm so dyslexic I can't even do long division, as sad as that is. So I don't have anything to hide, you know, and I kind of feel sorry for the guy, really, but he got what he deserved, I guess.
That's right. Jaws got him and sucked him by the fat marrow. That's like I said, that the Romanex themselves have invited me to their house to chill with them and see their evidence, and I haven't done it because I'm poor and agoraphobic, but that's their response. Well, why don't you come here and see for yourself? And that's what they told me. So, I mean, that's a pretty bold thing to me. If you're faking something, why don't you come see for yourself? Eat some nachos with us. Bring your jammies.
We've had lots of people that were skeptics come over, and it's, you know, it's pretty much changed their life. We had another radio show come, and they were, you know, one of my biggest, I'm not going to say rivals, but they trashed me all the time. And they came over, and they had experiences, and now they're one of my biggest supporters. So that's how it happens.
Somebody said, have Paul Kemble spend the night.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to the core of this. It's about married contactees, couples going through strange ordeals at their bedside. So if you could, Stan, how did you two meet? And if you could, this is the dating game. How did you two meet?
Well, Lisa lived in Nebraska.
And don't skimp on the details.
Yeah, especially for you, I won't. Lisa lived in Nebraska. I lived in Colorado. And, you know, we met online, believe it or not. What was it, Lisa? It was like Yahoo 30s chat or something like that. I don't remember.
Was it Plenty of Fish or OK Cupid?
No.
No, nothing like that. But we actually, you know, we started playing like online, not blackjack, but spades, and, you know, started playing games together. And we just started chatting and became really good friends, and then kind of fell for each other, and we started doing this long-distance dating stuff. And she'd only been to Colorado once, and, you know, I wanted her to come visit me, so, you know, I went up to try to videotape the surrounding area, and that's when I had my first experience, was because of her, so.
Yeah, he blames it on me, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I have ghosts, not aliens.
So your first experience happened right after you met her, like your very first experience?
Well, you know, really not my very... I had experiences when I was a kid. My father was in the military. You know, he worked with missiles, and there was an incident in 68. I was 5 years old at the time, where a missile came down and armed one of the UFOs, and they sent my dad along with the detail out to try to see what was going on. And, you know, I remember this strange-looking woman that kind of shot up my childhood and then kind of forgot about it until the UFO incident in 2000. And, you know, oddly enough, my experiences just kicked into gear major big time after 2000. And Lisa still decided to marry me, which I think is absolutely amazing.
So people think I'm crazy for saying, you know, but... been a fun ride.
Well, you know, she believed and I didn't. She actually helped me through this because I was really the biggest skeptic. And she kind of helped me get through it and said, okay, it's not the end of the world, and I believe, and you don't, but you will soon. And then she kind of made fun of me all the way through it when I'd panic. So that kind of lightened things
up.
He
screams and runs like a little girl.
He sounds like me when I go outside late at night. I'll go outside late at night and look at the sky, and if I see something weird, I freak out and run inside. I'm afraid I'm going to get sucked up in the sky.
Stan's fear is more when, you know, at night when we're in bed and something reaches up and grabs his leg or pulls the blankets off or, you know, things like that. That's when it's really hilarious to me.
When you see things walking into the closet and there shouldn't be anything there, when you hear noises and there shouldn't be anything there, I still get a little freaked out. I'm a lot better, though. I mean, it's gotten so much that, you know, it's just kind of blasé for us. A good example, we had some new investigators come over. They're going to, you know, collect evidence as things happen. They lived kind of close to me, and they came over, and the house just had all kinds of activity, and they were flipping out, just absolutely flipping out. And they kept looking at us like, what's wrong with you guys? Why aren't you excited about this? It's like, this happens all the time. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Ooh, you know.
So what kind of activity was happening when they were over there?
I don't know. Let's see. I don't remember some of it, Lisa.
Flashes of light in the middle of the room, in a absolutely dark room. Yeah. Just like a spark of light right in the middle of them. I mean, they got it all on video. Things moving.
orbs flying around, they originally came up because I was woken up about 3 o'clock in the morning and I heard a noise, and for some reason I thought my stepdaughter had come over for whatever reason, because I was half asleep, and I went downstairs, and as I was going downstairs I heard the sliding glass to the backyard, you know, slam shut, and I looked, the sliding glass door was unlocked, and I remember locking it, but I couldn't see anything out of place. I was so tired, I just went back to bed. The next morning, I got up to open the garden-level family room window, and there were two handprints on the window, and the handprints were, well, they weren't human. I mean, even the dermal ridges and the handprints themselves, three fingers, a very long thumb. So these paranormal guys came to collect some evidence, and then when they were over, I mean, they were seeing orbs of light, flashes. The guy set a water bottle down on the desk by the computer, and we watched it levitate and fly across the room. You know, all this stuff. And they have it all. You know, they did the witness reports and captured a lot of that stuff. So
Lisa, what's an experience that you recall when you are in the bed at night? What's one of the weirdest ones that you can remember just offhand?
The weirdest one or the funniest one?
I know which one.
May be funny to me.
let's go with funny. Funny's good.
And most people won't think this is funny, but it is. But 2003, I think it was 2003, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I don't know, if you've had surgery, you know what I'm talking about, but it's like your throat is like irritated and dry, and it just coughs. So I got up and I went to the kitchen to get a drink, because I just couldn't stop coughing. And I came back into the room, and Stan sat up and he's like, "Did they take you too?" I'm a smart ass. It's like, "Oh yeah, uh-huh, sure, they took me too." So I crawled back in bed thinking he's a nut job, and laid back down, still coughing, and then Stan got up. He had to go to the bathroom. He gets halfway to the door, and he's like, "Tell me this is yours." It's like, "Stan, it's pitch black in here." "What?" He said, "Tell me it's yours." Finally, you know, about three times of asking, me saying, "I can't see you." He flipped on the light, and there he stood in this red plaid nightgown, woman's nightgown, with the Mickey Mouse on the pocket. And he's like, "Tell me it's yours." It's like, "No, it's cute, but it's not mine." He said, "Is it the girls'?" It's like, "Stan, no, it's not the girls'. They're, you know, 14 years old. Why would they have a, no?" And, I mean, it was all I could do not to fall off the bed. I was laughing so hard. This looked so ridiculous.
There's stories about stuff, people waking up in different clothes and houses and stuff like that, and being dropped off at the wrong places.
Yeah. Well, the story continues with, he started wigging out. He's like, "Oh, my God, there's something cold." There was a wet, cold, gooey spot on the back of his nightgown, and it had gotten cold enough that he felt it. He's like, "Get it off." So here I am, laughing, trying to get this nightgown off of him, and he's freaking out. "Don't get it on my head. Oh, God, you know, just gross." And by that time, he's in tears. I mean, he is so freaked out, and I'm still laughing, thinking, who can I call at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning to tell the story to. Yeah.
Well, it's even funnier because I went to bed for my bachelor party. My friend, who was my best friend, best friend at the wedding, got me a shirt made as a joke. And on it, the black shirt with white lettering, it says, "I've been abducted by aliens." And all I got was this lousy T-shirt. Swear to God, true story, I went to bed with that T-shirt and came back in a woman's nightgown. So,
if anybody has that T-shirt, we'd like to meet you someday.
aliens are probably wearing it.
Yeah.
You
can't tell me that.
They're like, "Hey, man, I dig this shirt. I'm going to take your shirt." Probably why they took it.
Well,
alien humor? Possibly.
We sent that off to the scientists, and that wet spot ended up having a protein that they still can identify to this day and something that resembled that they use for in vitro fertilization. It's not the same thing, but it resembles it. So
it's like polyvinylpropylene?
Polyvinylpropylene. It's hard to say. But, yeah, weird.
So, Stan, when it comes to the alien in the window situation, many people I've seen, they say, oh, I believe Stan's a contactee, but something about that alien in the window. I wanted to know your thoughts about that. But one thing I wanted to say is recently there's a guy who I met named, where is his name? I had it, Gregory Harrell. He's going to be in the show in November. And in the 70s, he had a lot of UFO experiences he filmed. And this guy's never been on radio. He sent me and Guy his DVD and book. And in this video, I'll have to send you the link and stuff at some point and let you see it. He's on YouTube, too. In this video, this little bitty space suit flies by, and it looks like a little bean in a space suit, and he has it plain as day. It's on the cover of his book, and the first thing I thought when I saw that was the little bitty alien in the Stan Romanek window would fit perfectly in that little suit. It just chilled me.
Well, many
so what are
people
your thoughts?
Criticize, people, Jeff, criticize that video and saying, you know, why would aliens look in windows? Many, many experiencers experience that over and over again, especially in their childhoods. This woman, Karina Sables, she wrote The Collectors. She's out of Canada, but she writes about her experience with the alien in the window. A lot of people have seen it. The people who criticize us for having it happen to us need to do their research, read some books, talk to experiencers.
Well, I won't even stand to see that picture, that video sometime of that little suit, and I bet you'll probably get goosebumps.
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy again?
Gregory Harrell. I'll have to send you the information. I'll send it to you. Sometime soon, and to your Facebook. But I'll send you his Facebook link. I mean, his YouTube link and everything. But you'll have to check it out. It's pretty trippy. Did you watch that stuff yet, Guy?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I got it right here, though, sitting next to me to check it out.
Yeah, that suit is, I mean, he has his camera in his backyard, and he gets all kinds of weird stuff. But there's this one in particular. It's like something beams down and it's in a little bitty suit. I swear, it's just, it's crazy. When he told me he'd never been on a radio show before, I just could not believe it. So I'm really looking forward to interviewing him in November.
Hey, real quick, Angela Joyner's in our chat room and she says, hi to Stan and Lisa.
Oh, hi, Angie.
She's a sweetheart. I love Angela. She really is a sweetheart.
Tell Randall hi.
Yeah, she heard you.
And I want to add, she loves the Church of Neighbors Radio Show. That's right.
We love it, too.
Thank you. That's me being sleazy. Angelica Joyner listens to Neighbors, so you should, too. But, yeah. All right. Basically, what's going on with the Romaneks right now? We know the tale. You've been on the show. You were on our, what was it, our second show ever? And that one was wild.
Yeah.
Like a 3-hour extravaganza. Great show. One of our best ever. What is Stan up to now with his new book? Basically, what I want you both to do is tell us about your books that you're writing and tell us a little bit about it. And we'll start with Stan and then go to Lisa.
Well, there are two books that I'm working on. One, I kind of did a dry run. There were some regressions that happened with Dr. Leo Sprinkle, and during the regression, something happened. And I really didn't like talking about this too much because it was really hard for me to accept what was going on, but I end up not being myself. and whatever it was that happened had an ability to read minds and teleport things and all this crazy stuff. So eventually I got coerced into, when people decided that I should, you know, put these transcripts in a book and talk about them, because there is some absolutely amazing information in. Well, I put it out there for a while, but I found some mistakes, and I'm working on getting that out again once it's fixed. And then I'm working on my next book, which hopefully will be out real soon, too, called Cosmic Answers. And it's a continuation of some of my stuff, and, you know, it answers a lot of questions. You know, it talks about what I've learned with my experiences and what's going on with the world and, you know, what's happening, and talks about timeline wars and, you know, how our timeline's been messed with, and talks about all kinds of crazy stuff. And then Lisa is writing a book, which is going to be really amazing, because it's...
I can tell them.
Oh, yeah. It's a really amazing book, because it's from the wife's perspective. So there you go.
And the first one's called?
The first one's called The Orion Regressions. The second one's called Cosmic Answers. And your book is? I'll let her talk about it. Don't get mad at me.
It's called From My Side of the Bed.
Nice. That fits in perfect with
my shirt. Yeah. From My Side of the Bed, Pulling Back the Covers on Alien Extraterrestrial Contact. And it's me. I mean, it's my anger, my humor, it's all in there.
The self-help book.
It's all the dirty little things that Stan doesn't talk about, you know, like how he misidentified the UFO when it was actually a TV and an RV, you know, just the funny
stuff. Oh, my God. Some of the stuff that happened really are quite hilarious, and, you know, that's kind of how we deal with things, and she puts it all in there, and Lisa's really funny anyhow, and this book will make you cry, laugh, gasp, you name it, it's going to be a good one.
I mean, it takes you from beginning, it starts with my divorce and the stress of, you know, every woman has gone through some kind of heartbreak and the stresses that go with it, but to be thrown into this UFO stuff and how devastating it can be on a family and the children. I mean, it's important for someone to write it, and I'm doing it. So
about how long is it going to be till it comes out? Is it done, or are you still working on it?
It's in the editing process now. It's done. I just have to go through the editing process, and so my hope is that it'll be out by September.
Yeah,
I hope.
Yeah, with all the books, we're hoping by September, because we had an editor, but the editor we had kind of went off the deep end, so we had to find somebody else, and now we're working feverishly to get all this stuff done so we can get it out at least end of August, September-ish, we're hoping.
So if you, I got a question from Skymon871. Stan, have you seen any grays lately, or has it just been other types of phenomena in the house, like the orbs and the stuff moving?
You know, there was one thing I thought I saw that looked kind of ET-ish, but it ended up being a black mass that kind of ducked into my office, and I ran in quick. This was during... Easter, right, Lisa?
Yes, Easter.
Easter.
It was like the shadow people.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of people saw it going to the office, and I grabbed a camera and took a picture. It ended up being this black mass just right by my bookcase, right in front of me, and I took a picture of it. So.
And well, there were two, one the night before and then one on Easter Day. One was an adult figure, black shadow figure, sitting in his office chair.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And the small shadow was a child size.
Yeah.
So... you know, it's hard to say it's UFO related. It could be the ghost, you know, phenomenon. Who knows what it is? But it's all interconnected.
Yeah, I deal a lot with that, with shadow people. It kind of sounds kind of funny saying that, but I mean that's really what you can call them. I mean, I've seen them as small as like little dogs. you know. And I do believe that all of this phenomena is tied together somehow. You know, with the ghosts and UFOs and all that. I think there's definitely a connection between everything.
I agree with you, because it's like once that portal's open, it's like anything can come through. You just have to learn to protect yourself and to, you know, repel the bad out, which we've done.
Here's another question from Sky. Have you guys ever used Ouija boards or anything like that? Or
one has been brought in a few years ago on Halloween, but I wouldn't allow it in my house or the garage to be messed with.
Yeah, and it was, believe it or not, I've got some pretty impressive people involved with my case, and MIT physicist, who is now a dear friend of ours, is one of the main physicists involved in my case. His name is Dr. Claude Swanson. And we have these epic Halloween parties every year, and he came to our Halloween party, and I turned my garage into a crypt, and we have, you have to get your beer out of the coffin and stuff. And we were messing around with the Ouija board, and nothing was really going on with the Ouija board. And then me and Claude decided to sit down and mess with it. And, I kind of grew up the way we played. We didn't touch the planchette or whatever they call it, and sometimes move around by itself. And nobody believed me, so me and Claude Swanson were, playing with this thing, and we had tons of people making sure we weren't touching it, and the damn thing was moving all across the table, and it answered some of his physics questions, so everybody's really impressed.
To an equation that Stan had written one night in his sleep.
Yep.
But yeah, they're not toys. I don't care who you are.
Oh,
they are not toys. They're nothing to mess with. They're dangerous.
No, if you have activity and stuff like that, you definitely don't want to be playing around with, because you never know what you're talking to. I mean, we had a guest. Actually, they were twins. They had supposedly an entire channel through a Ouija board to them. Can you imagine writing a book with a Ouija board? Like,
what was the book about?
It was. I'm trying to remember. I think it was about. A message from these aliens or something like that, or I don't remember. It was a while ago. It was kind of odd. That would be very time consuming. Yeah.
Well, that's like, I don't think all Ouija board experiences are bad. Like, I've told mine before on the show and wrote an article. When my dad died, I got stuck with his ashes, and no one would pick them up, and I had to do it, and I had them in my house, and one day I saw a shadow go down the hall. So me and my friends all pulled out the Ouija board, and basically we asked it where to take the ashes, and it spelled out Blacktop Mountain in Georgia, and I hadn't thought of Blacktop Mountain in Georgia forever. My dad used to take me there as a kid all the time, and I never thought about that place. It was totally out of my mind, but the Ouija board brought it up. So we went there to take the ashes, because it was where my dad went to military school, a place called Raven Gap. And basically, we got up on the mountain and got lost. We pulled up the Ouija board again. It told us which one. It took us straight to a peak where I'd been with my dad. And we threw the ashes out over the Georgia mountains. And then we all got together with the board again, and it spelled out, "I love you," and we all cried like big babies. So I think good things can come from them, and, of course, bad, just like anything.
You know what kind of freaks me out is, have you ever heard of the Frank's Box? It's that ghost hunters use it sometimes.
Yeah.
We had, because we have paranormal activity all the time, I swear we've had just about every ghost hunter in this area here and some from other countries, but one of the people had brought a Frank's Box. And son of a gun, if it wasn't answering questions. And there was one time when I asked the questions, well, if you're not human, what do you think of humans? Plain as day, it says, humans, I hate humans. And oh my goodness, I was just like, oh my God, flipped out. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, we had April Paige Slaughter on, and she like talked to her grandfather through one of those weird things. I don't even understand or begin to understand how those things work, but I've heard stories that are just bizarre. Yep. So, Lisa, as far as your children, if it's okay, how do they deal with all this? Are they going through experiences as well?
Yes. My son Jake, when he was 8 years old, shortly after I married Stan, had his first experience. And Stan had woken up and woke me up and says, I think they took Jake. And I said, go check. You're not going to go to sleep, and I'm not either until we know he's there, so just go check. He was there. We didn't think anything of it. It's just a dream, right? Next morning, got up, out on the deck having coffee, and there was, like, something on our bedroom window. It was in, like dry erase marker or something. So it's like, oh, crud. I ran in, and on Jake's wall, he had written this, and it is in his handwriting, this huge equation on the wallpaper, of course, in permanent marker. And it turns out it's some kind of a Bessel function.
Yeah, I
we don't know what it is, but that's what Claude tells us. And no 8-year-old could do that without major guidance. Trust me, the kid wasn't doing normal math very well. So, I mean, that was his first experience. And from that point until he's 17 now, and he still sleeps with, like, 13 pillows. And all that's in my book, too, of just the drama of how my kids had changed, you know, after I married Stan and all this stuff in our lives. They didn't know about any of the alien stuff for, like, 4 years. We just tried to keep them as ignorant about it as possible. But they were, you know, hearing things in their closets, which there's nothing there. But they would prop things in front of the closet doors. And my daughters now are going to be 23. And none of them, there are no closet doors in my house on any of their rooms. They have just taken them off and put things in there to make it a part of their room. That's the way they dealt with the closet situation. Just for the fear of aliens use them as a portal. You know, we knew that. They didn't.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, it's really impacted them a lot, but more from the fact that our lives for 10 years have been nothing but alien talk, no matter what day it is. Something weird happens, and it brings it all up, and we all, you know, we talk about it. But all of a sudden, in the past 6 months, my kids, you know, my daughters, who have, like, pushed it away for the whole time, it's like, I don't want to deal with it, that stands crap, whatever, have started looking into it. You know, they want to read his book now. They want to know more. And Jake, my son, has always been like Stan, where he misses when nothing happens. So their combined energy brings out things. You know, it's like, well, I miss it. Nothing happens. It's boring. I tell them, knock it off. You know, don't put that out there. Don't bring that energy in. I don't want stuff happening. So, and as the girls, I don't know if they've been taken. There's been some experiences, but they deny it still. But there's been some really strange things with them.
You know, it's funny, we have researchers over and they'll talk to the girls and the girls will say, oh yeah, I saw a shooting star that turned left. And they go, that wasn't a shooting star. But to them, it's just normal, you know.
Yeah.
To them, it's just every day. And it got so bad that we finally had to talk to them about it because they were experiencing, you know, they were the first ones to see the shadow people. And, you know,
well,
so
we had to tell them because when we moved to Colorado, we had moved there 2 weeks after we moved there. Our house was broken into, and the only thing taken was the UFO file that we had. I mean, no one had bothered us before about it, so we just kept all the evidence in a file, well, copies of. And my kids were home at the time, so they were, like, hiding in the lowest level of the house, getting out of a window, you know, freaking out. It's like somebody's in our house, and it's not Mom and Stan. So we had to sit them down and say, okay, it's dangerous. You know, this is why we have to really be careful. So if we're not home and you are, lock the house.
Did you ever find out who it was, or?
Well, no, it's happened so many times.
Government, for sure, it's coming.
In Colorado Springs, there's military bases everywhere. Who knows? I mean, we can't prove it, obviously, but there are police reports.
You know what? We've been I've been shot at. You know, the first time I was shot at, April heard it. I mean, I was out in the front yard, and then, you know, I still got a bullet. We got to get that fixed. I still got a bullet hole in my windshield of my car.
Yep. That happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, I still haven't had it fixed.
So did this? Do you have activity? So have you lived in two different places, and is the activity following you around?
We've lived in eight different places, and it goes with us. We've had to because of the harassment move. That's wherever we go. It doesn't matter where we go.
Yep. But I'm not moving again, so bring it on.
I mean, if you had, have you tried alternative things, like maybe having priests come in there and try to exercise, and have you had...
I think they laugh at that stuff. We've tried everything from Wiccan spells to priests to Native American stuff.
We've never had a priest come in.
Well, didn't we have a priest come in?
No, we've never had a priest come into our home and
we should try that then.
Do a blessing.
But
no.
we've tried everything else, including planting crystal. Here's an interesting thing. We had some people plant, you know, supposedly they said it's some kind of spoof thing. I didn't know you're supposed to plant crystals on the corners of your house or something. I don't know where they planted them, but ended up, all the crystals one day, just out of nowhere, ended up on our fireplace mantle, just all lined up in a row.
And I went and checked because I was with them when they were buried, not planted, because they're not going to grow.
Well,
but where they were buried... And it was cold. I mean, the ground was frozen, and there was no disturbed soil in those areas at all. But they were covered in dirt and laid on the fireplace mantle.
Yep.
So we had to contact them, so we'd go through the whole ritual on our own, me and my friend Jen, to put them back, create the pyramid, put the spell, you know, all this stuff. We were willing to try anything. So we have a crystal formation around, and we have an angelic gateway around also, like a double thing, but, you know, things still come through.
You know, a lot of people think it's crazy, but when you go through this, really, your mind opens up. You know, before I didn't believe in UFOs, and then it's like, oh my goodness, I see a UFO. Then I didn't believe in ETs, but something has to be driving the UFO, and then I had my experiences. You know, and I always joke around that I don't believe in Bigfoot, and we have a friend that says, you'll believe in Bigfoot when he bends you over a log. So it's like...
Yeah. I'd come and poops on your lawn.
Yeah, no,
so, you know, you have to open up a little bit, you know. So we've tried all kinds of things, and what's interesting is they find the most mundane things fascinating. Like, we had all our remote controls for our TVs disappear for a couple of weeks, and woke up one morning and they're lined up nice and neat at our kitchen countertop. And, you know, now, and I tell this to everybody, what makes my case so different is most of the stuff that happens only seems to happen when there's people around.
Yeah.
And especially like paranormal investigators or those guys, man, this house goes crazy.
Well, we had one group, Doug's from Florida. What's his group called?
I don't know.
I can't remember either. Anyway, they came to do a like a podcast investigation where they had their camera set up and it was live to their team, and they had a computer set up so we could talk, you know, they could talk to us and we could answer them if they had a question or saw something. So I was sitting at the computer and I was talking to them, you know, just entertaining them and myself because, you know, and everyone else had come out on the deck, and they were looking for UFOs and doing their thing just while they were smoking before they got started.
Not believing in UFOs.
Yeah, they didn't believe. And a whole fleet of UFOs just came right over them.
Slowly.
Low enough that they could absolutely not doubt it for a second. And they were so excited. It's like, you can't tell me. I didn't just see what I saw. You know, this just really happened. And they're like, why aren't you out there, Lisa? It's like, seriously? 8 years of this crap, I've seen it. I don't need to go out there and look for more. I'm talking to you. It's, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. I'll see a UFO at night, and I come running in. Lisa, there's a UFO over the house. Tell him to go away. I'm sleeping.
Yeah. Take a picture, whatever. Go away.
It's after a while you kind of get numb to it. It's like, I mean, I've had this in Guy. I've had many UFO experiences, but now it's like, I haven't had any experiences in, like, I think I saw a few UFOs earlier in the year that seemed like they were leaving my home, but lately, as far as beams and stuff, I haven't seen anything in a long time, and I think I have this frustration or anger with them, because it seems like they're so, it seems like they're as mysterious and deceptive as the government who's hiding it from us. There's just these little games, it's like the Riddler, you gotta, you know, it's always messing with you. They just, it comes to the point I started having, like, thoughts, like, I just want to strangle you to death. Go away. I think they did.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating part about it, you know. It's like they're just, it's like you're having to deal with, you know, the Riddler from Batman all the time, playing these little games, and I just don't understand why they just don't come and sit down and, you know, let's get it on. Let's talk it out. And
yeah, I think that's coming. I think they're afraid that we're not ready. But I can tell you probably the most, how would I put it, amazing thing that's happened as far as these experiences are the children that are showing up. I mean, that to me is probably the most heart-wrenching, too, and quite amazing, you know, when you have all these children showing up with other people seeing them and you're taking pictures of them. You know, it's pretty weird.
Yeah, we've had four.
Like alien children?
Yes. We have pictures of three of them, but we've actually seen four of the children, of the nine that we know exist.
Well, does that include the boy?
Oh, yeah. Okay, five.
Five, yeah, the boy, that's really tall. And, you know, it's interesting. How it first started was Lisa had a surprise book party for me. I became a best-selling author, and she invited all my friends. It was just marvelous. And during the party, it was about 9 o'clock at night. It was raining outside. I was looking out the window, and at the end of the driveway, there was this little girl. And it's raining, and I'm thinking, what the hell is a little girl doing out this late at night? What parents would let their little girl out this late at night in the rain, and why is she wearing a gray jumpsuit? I thought it was totally bizarre. Went outside to see if I could help her. She ran away. Well, I'm telling everybody about this, and she came back. I was telling my friend Victoria. I said, hey, V, this little girl's back. She goes, I don't care. Just blow her off. She's probably the neighbor kid. Went outside to see if I could help her, and she ran off again. This time, I took my camera with me because I didn't have a flashlight, and I was using the flash as a light to guide me, and she popped her head up from behind the tree, and I got a picture of it. Well, I looked at this picture, and it was the most amazing, angelic-looking, beautiful little girl you'd ever seen in your life, except her eyes weren't normal. I mean, she was not altogether human. And my friend Rick, who's one of the researchers involved in my case and also ex-naval intelligence, came up and he goes, Stan, are you okay? And I couldn't say anything. I was just so dumbfounded. And I turned around and showed him the picture. He goes, oh, my God, you have to get this in. Other people have to see this picture. So I took it in, and there were some scientists, researchers, and all of our friends. I think there are how many people there, Lee?
17.
17 people.
Oh.
And they see this picture, and, I mean, people were crying because it was almost like the picture itself emitted love. And they were saying, go put it on the computer so we could see it better. So I took like two steps, and all of a sudden the camera went beep. The picture disappeared.
Picture was gone.
And then shortly after that, there was a phone call from me. I got a phone call, and it was, I don't remember what.
A little girl voice that says, Daddy, don't worry, I'm okay. You'll see me again soon.
Yep. And I just started bawling, just absolutely bawling, because during one of my abduction experiences, I remember being led into one of these, into a room with these little kids, and one little girl was holding my leg, just full of this love, and I wanted to protect them from these beings, and they told me that they wouldn't survive with me, so I had to let them go. But this little girl looked exactly like me, and like, you know, something else. But then we were messing around with the camera. Actually, that was after. But the cats were, that's what happened. I'm trying to get this straight. I was in the backyard, and the cats were acting funny, and they were, I had put a cooler that I was going to wash out. We'd just come back from camping by the grill that was on the deck. And I was taking pictures of the cats that were acting funny, and they were jumping at something by the cooler. And as soon as I got close, this little girl stood up from behind the grill and ran out the back gate. Well, when she ran, I noticed she had a bunch of flowers in her hand. It's like, oh, my God, the neighbor kids are picking my wife's flowers. My wife is going to have a cow. So I'm yelling at this little girl to stop, and I went to find her, and she heard. Well, later when I had some friends come over, they go, so what's with the bouquet of flowers that's on your doorstep, on your friend's step? She had picked flowers and left a bouquet of flowers. But even more than that, when I looked at the pictures I took of the cats, I got a picture of her looking through the slats of the deck. And then,
but when you chased her, she just disappeared. She went towards the neighbor's house that was actually empty at the time.
Yeah.
She just, like, boom, gone.
And disappeared. And then we started getting calls. I was on a call with a friend, and we got a call from one of the girls telling us there's nine children, seven of the same, two each one with different, which means there's seven children from one woman and one child from a friend of ours and one child supposedly from Lisa. And the one that was by the deck, I believe, was probably Lisa's. And then we got a call saying that they'd meet us at... No, that was the Aztec one. That's probably yours. We got a call saying that they were going to meet me or see me at the conference I was going to do, next conference I was going to do it in Aztec, New Mexico.
Which Angie was there.
Yep. Angie was there, yeah, that's right. And sure enough, we got a picture of one of them, and it was at a Mason's Lodge, and there were people that saw this. We've got witness reports. And the Mason came up to me. He was freaking out. He was crying really hard because he was so scared. He said, this little girl was not human. I know she wasn't human. It was just freaking me out. And, it just went from there.
Well, this little girl actually sat down. She came into the audience when Paula Harris was talking. And she sat down by this woman and said, I can't find my dad. Can you give him a message for me? So she took out a receipt from her purse and started writing as fast as she could. And the little girl said, Tell my dad we're here to help Earth and where they were from. Tell Lisa my name is Suri and my brother's name is Nadu, or one of the boys is Nadu. So they didn't know who it was for until after Stan, who was talking next, had given his presentation, and everyone was freaking out. But this kid had come in, and just something about her, I mean, she was just very odd. And they were very, I don't think there was any kids there.
No.
Very few. I mean, the little girl that volunteered from the library, of course, but
hey guys.
She was just out of place.
Yeah, we got to go to break here real quick.
Yeah, we got to go to break. We're going to take a 10-minute break and just stay on the phone, and we'll come back, and we'll do the second hour. So a 10-minute break. Joe's calling us to the break, so we have to go. So we'll continue when we come back. All righty. Going to break.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Ha ha ha!
Guy Weedle. So, just before we get back to Romanex, I wanted to tell you about next week's guest. Next week's guest, let me read you a quote from the front of his book. "I was born with the devil in me. He has been with me ever since." Herman Webster Mudgett. For decades, English investigators have been convinced that one or two of the Jack the Ripper murders were committed by an American surgeon in London. Maybe they are right. We're going to get into H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer, who some believe was possibly even Jack the Ripper. He traveled abroad. He had full knowledge of surgical instruments. He's known as the Chicago Killer, the Fair Killer, America's first serial killer. The book, Bloodstains, by Jeff Mudgett. Based on a true story, Jeff Mudgett's related to America's first serial killer. Herman Webster Mudgett was his name. He also went by H.H. Holmes. Currently, Leonardo DiCaprio is about to play him in a movie called Devil in the White City, based on the book by Eric Larson. Basically, H.H. Holmes had a hotel, the Murder Castle. You would check in, but you would not check out. He would stand behind glass and cyanide you. He would lock you in safes. He was the devil incarnate, and Jeff Mudgett's related to him. He has his diary, and he has some paranormal encounters that are quite bizarre with his link to H.H. Holmes. And H.H. Holmes is one scary mother trucker, I go ahead and tell you. The movie's going to be by David Fincher next Saturday, and also Mark Potts is going to stop by for 30 minutes at the end of that show to go into the handwriting analysis of Jack the Ripper compared to Herman Webster Mudgett, otherwise known as H.H. Holmes. So be ready for a creaking July show of hellish proportions. So let's get back to the Romanex. All right, Stan, if you could, we were talking about on break about some messages that these beings have given you. If you could you go into that a bit for us during these strange, crappy times we live in? What have they told
you? Well, you know, the biggest message that I get from these experiences, you know, it's time to grow up. It's time for the human race to grow up. On top of that, one of the things that I've learned, too, and this is really important that people hear this, that we have a choice. The human race has a choice. We have this amazing ability. And when I do my talks, I do this whole presentation. I'm learning to do this whole presentation now that proves exactly what I'm saying. The human race has this ability, especially global consciously wise, to change quantum reality naturally. There are beings out there that do not have that ability. They have to use technology to do this. We can do it naturally. We also have a direct connect to source, a direct connect to God, the oneness, whatever you want to call it. And in being able to change quantum reality naturally, the people that control us, you know, the rich elite, understand this. So they try to keep us in fear so they can control us. And by keeping us in fear, we believe what we believe, we manifest. So if we believe in this 2012 crap, then we're going to make it come to be. I mean, we're going to make it come true just because we manifest what we believe. If we can understand who we really are and own up to it, then we can change it. And if we believe in peace and love, you know, it'll change to peace and love. And that's as simple as it is. And my message to the human race is, come on, guys, it's time to grow up. It's time to look up, take responsibility for who you are and what you're doing, and let's get out of this hole.
Yeah, and it seems like during this time that all, you know, throughout humanity, everybody's always said the end's coming, you know, Armageddon, yada, yada, yada. But it seems like all that energy is going to build up, and I do believe it's at a crossroads. And
Yep.
It's got to be transmuted or transformed, or it's going to manifest. And it's already, evidence is already mounting that it is manifesting. If it's from people snapping and going postal, like the Norway thing that just happened, or if it's natural, you know, phenomenon that's happening with the earth changes. I mean, it's already, you can see signs of it happening right now. And, you know, I know on that date, December 21st, 2012, there is a weird alignment that's very unique that happens like every 26 or 36,000 years, but I don't think it's going to be like the John Cusack movie, you know. Hopefully not. That would be pretty crappy, but...
Well, one English guy, you know, Lisa told you that we don't believe in this 2012 crap, and...
That it's going to be a bad negative thing, no?
If you talk to the... And that started because one English guy thought he knew what the Mayan calendar was saying. And if you talk to the Mayan elders alive today, they think white people are crazy. They said, hell no, it's not going to be some kind of tragic, horrible, end-of-the-world thing. You know, if we all believe that it is, it'll manifest that way. All it is a shift. And guess what? We're in the middle of this shift right now. All that earth-changing stuff and the weather stuff is all because of technology, these wealthy elite have, you know, this Illuminati or whoever the hell they are, they call themselves now, you know, like HARP. You know, there's so much evidence that it's all that, and people just seem to ignore it and think, oh, it's the end of the world. It's like, come on, guys, snap out of it, really.
Well, I think it's natural, and it could be that, too. I think they've been manipulating it. You know, they seed the clouds now to, like, for events so it won't rain. And I mean, even if you're having a wedding, if you got the money, you can pay someone to come seed the clouds so it won't rain or whatever. So, I mean, you got all
Please.
That building up. And,
you know, you can go online. You can go to the patent office and see the patents for the HARP technology that they use to, I mean, they can even create earthquakes with this HARP technology. You can see it. Go look at yourself. It's patented.
Yeah. Well, I definitely wouldn't put it past these people doing that. The Japan thing, man, that thing just gets ransacked. I'm not surprised it's not gone underwater yet. But, and I know for the Chinese Olympics or whatever, they always mess with the weather. The more you mess with Mother Nature and tinker with it, the more it's going to bite you on the butt later. We just had a terrible drought in Florida for a long time, and finally it started raining when some of these tropical storming hurricanes came through. It rained for 3 or 4 days and didn't rain constantly, but for a while it was so horrible, I was like, man, it's like the desert out there. And then the heat wave is going on right now, and, you know, probably it's happening where you live too, isn't it? The heat wave, is that
hitting
you hard?
It's like we have a monsoon. I mean, it's rained, and it's humid here. Colorado isn't supposed to be humid, but, man, for a long time, at least where we live, it's incredibly humid. It's like I'm in Nebraska again. It's crazy. Real hot and humid.
Is Guy still there?
Yeah, I'm here. It's dying. I'm dying in Philly, too, man. It was like 106 yesterday or something like that.
Right, man.
Yeah, it was again killed.
Well, there's going to be changes, but, you know, I think there has to be. And, you know, one of the things I've been told is, you know, the system's broken. You can't fix it anymore. It has to be replaced. So there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some disarray for a while. You know, the economy's, I'm sure, going to have to collapse before they can refix everything.
Well, we've reached our debt ceiling, so, I mean, we got no more money to spend.
Yeah, we did that a long time ago. Now it's just, there are like trillions of dollars overdue and everything's going to collapse soon. And I'm telling you, it's probably going to happen in August the way it looks.
Yeah, I've seen lots of articles lately about them expecting civil unrest and Goldman Sachs people buying guns and all kinds of weird stuff.
Stockpiling food and water.
Yeah. Hey, that's what we should do, Lisa.
I know, it's like... people, it's not the aliens you have to worry about. It's the people down the street that don't have water. You know?
Yeah, man. That's what you need to worry about. People don't understand that. They think their neighbor is all this wonderful, sweet guy and everything like that, but boy, when he gets thirsty, just watch out.
Oh, Mad Max. We'll
be drinking out of our hot tub. field.
We have a lot of lakes around here. I just have to learn how to do all that,
We do too, actually.
Getting all the stuff out of it and stuff, which I have no idea how to do, but, hey, I'm sure I could learn if I had to, for sure.
Watch those survival shows on cable TV. They teach you how to do it. They teach you how to suck water out of your sock.
Yeah, it's so gross.
Yummy.
Have you seen that show, The Colony, ever on Discovery?
No. Mm-mm.
It's a reality show. They take these people, they cram them in city blocks, like they buy up a whole giant dead city. It's on Discovery. It's called The Colony, and it's the craziest reality show I've ever seen in my life. People are freaking having to hunt snakes and alligators. There's inventors there that do solar panels and water. It's the most realistic, gritty. There's people that are part of the show that live there, and you have to fight them, and they're really violent. You have to, like, build weapons to protect your warehouse. I mean, it's gruesome. I can't believe it's even a reality show. I love it.
I love it.
The Colony. It's really cool if you ever get a chance to check it out. Or...
shows like that don't teach peace and love, do they? They teach you how to fight off the people down the street.
You know, if we're going to survive, we got to pull it. We got to, you know, stick together. Really, we got to stick together. And you know, the message I have is for everybody. Even the people that beat me up, you know, because of this and that have shot at me, this message is for them the most because they're the ones that are the lost, the most lost. So I can't exclude the message that I have from anybody. And even the bad off-world guys that are supposedly out there, this message is for them too. Because believe it or not, everything in this universe is connected. We're all part of that oneness, whatever that is, and we can't conceive of what that is, but we're all part of it. So, you know, this stuff, and it always amazes me that I used to be such a skeptic because when you kind of go through what I go through, you start understanding what's really going on out there, and it makes total sense, and it's actually more natural than the life I thought I was living. You know, when you go to church, you're told that you're made in God's image, and you're the only intelligent thing in this universe. And, you know, that's really depressing, because if we're made in God's image, and we're the only intelligent thing, that doesn't say much about God, because, you know, the human race is stupid and violent, pretty much. So then now I actually believe in God more, I think, now than I did when I didn't have these experiences, because it makes sense now. Now you can understand the grand scheme of things. And I don't look at God the same way. God is, you know, whatever God is, the oneness, whatever, you know, it's way beyond us. It's a consciousness of some kind.
Dan, do you think there are beings who are in line with the source who is God, and then perhaps beings who
absolutely
are not?
Absolutely. I've learned, and it makes sense, there are different things out there that evolved spiritually, physically, whatever, and the more evolved you are, the less physical you are, all the way to the angelic realms. I mean, angels are basically, they don't live here, so you might as well call them aliens, extraterrestrials, whatever you want to call them. And there's a hierarchy. There really is a hierarchy. This is another thing that I'm learning. You know, a lot of people think we live in a three-dimensional reality. We actually don't. We live in a multidimensional reality with multiple verses. We just perceive three dimensions. So, and there's things that fill up the space. You know, Dr. Claude Swanson talks about this, you know, and all these physicists are coming with these really amazing ideas now that all this empty space that you're looking at is actually filled with stuff, but just because you're at a different vibration or different density or whatever you want to call it, you can't perceive what's there. But there is stuff there. And even who we are might just be, you know, almost like a hologram or just like an illusion, because if you look at the molecular structure of what we are, we're pretty much just basically 99% space. Everything is space. So it's quite amazing.
Well, with all the stuff going on with the Hadron Collider, go ahead, Guy.
Yeah, I was just going to say the world of physics, I think, is the only really place in science where there's a lot of mavericks right now, people that are, you know, thinking outside the normal, you know, the peer review stuff. I mean, they sit around and they probably smoke bowls and talk about, you know, physics and stuff. No, I'm serious, man. It's like they used to do in the 60s.
That's true.
You know, and
you know, we got some amazing scientists in this world. And what's interesting, you know, like our friend Claude, he's the sweetest guy, but, you know, he's so smart, he just kind of doesn't worry about the mundane things. I mean, he's come over our house with two different pairs of, you know, a brown shoe and a black shoe on. He just doesn't care, you know. He's just that smart. It's quite amazing.
Well, with all the stuff going on with the Hadron Collider and, you know, them simulating the Big Bang, and they've even said that they've, you know, pretty much found proof that there's different dimensions, and they're just doing so much with messing around with those things that, I mean, there's no doubt that there's other dimensions on top of this one, and that I believe that that's where these beings reside. There's also, we had Dr. Joe Resnick on about, and his buddy that came on with him about nuclear reactors. And Joe Resnick and his partner, they've dissected atoms. They've broke down atoms in their, like, lab, and they got into dark matter, and I mean, it was weird. It was like talking to, you know, he was talking about the dark side and dark matter. And there's even theories that these beings may reside in, you know, in the universe in some of the dark matter. There's just so many things going on right now with, like, the telescopes and stuff, picking up Earth-like planets, and just so many discoveries right now. But it seems
they just picked up a huge, massive, ring of water vapor around a quasar. It's liquid water out in space. Going around a black hole.
Yeah, water. They found stars emitting water.
Really? That's just the craziest thing.
Yeah, it's.
That's got to confuse people.
Yeah, they found stars shooting water burst in outer space.
Well, you know, we talking to NASA people. You know, they say that. They estimate there's now, you know, the number's gone up. I think it's 500 billion planetary systems in our galaxy. That's 500 billion stars with planets rotating around them. On top of that, a lot of people don't know this. Our galaxy, actually, we aren't part of the Milky Way galaxy. We're part of another galaxy that collided with the Milky Way galaxy called the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy. And to make things even more amazing is now they estimate there's over 300 billion galaxies in the universe that they can detect. To think we're the only ones, you'd have to be just out of your mind, really.
Yeah, just to sit back and for somebody to say, I don't believe there's anything out there at all with all these discoveries, I just can't even fathom it. I just can't even grasp it. I mean, it's just crazy, you know, that someone could sit back and not think there's anything else but us with all the stuff going on lately, discovery-wise. But what's so weird about it, it seems like unless you're hunting down this information and tapping into these information sources, if you're just a regular, you know, Joe Schmo, average dude, you're not going to, they don't talk about this stuff in the mainstream media or nothing. They might mention something about it briefly, like, you know, a little fart in the wind or something, like they just found a moon on Pluto or near Pluto or whatever. I thought Pluto wasn't even a planet anymore. I thought it was a bunch of rocks or something, but I know I just heard that recently. But it seems like the people who know about this subject know where to look. That's the only way you can find out more about it. It's not just right in your face like it should be, you know.
Well, there's so much stuff that they're not telling us, you know, stuff about the moon, stuff about Mars, stuff about what's really going on, and it's silly. They just want to control people, and I think, honestly, after all the experiences me, Lisa, and my family have been through, you know, you kind of wonder why the governments are keeping this quiet. And I have a theory. It's not really, it's probably the secret government. It's probably the wealthy elite, especially the oil companies, don't want this out. Because let's say we make friends with an alien race, and let's say that they have all this amazing technology where we won't have to depend on oil anymore. You know, all these wealthy people are freaking out. They're going to lose their money, so, you know, they're trying their best to keep control over everything. And, you know, they're just screwing up themselves because, again, we're all part of this oneness. And what they do to other people, they do to themselves in the long run. It's just kind of silly.
So do you think these Illuminati people, N-A-U-H-T-H-Y, I always say Illuminate people, do you think there's some type of being that's not connected to the source that influences them? Like, you know, people say the reptilians, which I don't believe all reptilians are evil, but do you think, like back in the day, for instance, when you watch Ancient Aliens and all that stuff, it seems that the Egyptians and these ancient civilizations were definitely connected, in contact with, in league with beings from elsewhere. Do you think that some of these elite people are connected to these beings, and these beings that may not have our best interests at heart are influencing them? Because it does seem like people in power don't give a crap about us. Like Republicans, they just, they're
not
crazy.
Because they're guided by greed and money. And I do believe there's some off-world influence. I honestly do. There's good and bad up there, just like there's good and bad here. You know, the trick is trying to align yourself with the good guys, you know, and, you know, these things are way more intelligent than we are. They can manipulate a lot easier than, you know, we can understand. And, you know, here's the thing, though. The message is for them, too, because, again, they're all part of this oneness. What they do to something else will, in the long run, really will affect them. And you know what's interesting, and it just brings me back to my dad being in the military, how things affect other things. You know, you ever wonder why UFOs are so interested in nuclear weapons bases? Because what happens when somebody drops a nuclear bomb, it doesn't just affect this reality or this density, dimension, whatever you want to call it. That type of energy punches through a whole bunch of other layers that we can't understand and might actually hurt or destroy other things in those other layers. So,
and the thing is, it's like the further out it goes, it's like the ripple in a pond. The effect gets bigger and bigger and bigger the further out it goes.
Yeah. So,
yeah, and like with Joe Resnick, it was funny, we were talking about the nuclear reactors, and lately there was a fire at Los Alamos and then a flood, which is a nuclear lab. There was a Nebraska incident that was a nuclear reactor. It was like Mother Nature was trying to set these things off on some level. And then also in the UK there was this huge, like four nuclear reactors that were shut down because of jellyfish.
You know why why all those jellyfish are showing up? Because there are little that sit on the bottom of the ocean, the things that release those eggs for those jellyfish, and they only do it when it's a certain temperature. And because the oceans are warming up, these things think it's spring or whatever, and they start shooting out these little offspring. And that's why you have these huge amount of jellyfish now. They've completely taken over in Japan.
Millions of jellyfish.
Yeah, they have film of them doing it. It's just like this tube that sits on a rock or something down below, and you see it just squirting these little jellyfish out. It's
That's
crazy,
hot.
Man. Yeah, man. I was like,
That's
wow.
That's erotic.
And they're huge. They're huge. They're like as big as a truck tire, some of them. They grow that big. Like as big as a truck.
Erotic.
Huge.
Put your tentacles all over my body. Erotic.
Sting me.
So, Stan, what do you think about, have you been watching Ancient Aliens? To me, it's like right on. I think the History Channel is doing a good job. Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, I love
like,
the History Channel.
It's right on. I mean, it seems right on to me.
You know, I used to like to watch the Science Channel, too, but they were taken over by an English company who then was taken over. I believe it's owned by ABC now, and ABC's the worst when it comes to trying to debunk all this stuff. ABC has to be run by, if there is such a thing as an Illuminati, they're definitely part of that whole crew there, but, you know.
Yeah, you gotta remember though, it's all ratings. It's all about ratings, and you know, History Channel realized that, you know, all the UFO stuff, people watch it. You know what I mean? They tune into that stuff, and so I mean, look what happened to UFO Hunters, man. If the ratings go down, they're not looking for stuff. It's a TV show, you know.
Yeah.
They're
UFO Hunters.
No, can it?
I mean, it was okay. Some of it was okay, but there was like there was never any final outcome. There was no end result.
That'll be the case, dude, with just about anything.
But Ancient Aliens, they're like, they break it down more than I've ever seen on any documentary ever with like evidence. Yeah. That's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there taking apart stones with, like, you know, construction dudes and stuff, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty, the technology that they had to use, and, you know, have to use a diamond to cut this that way, and, you know, like when they were talking about the weird Egyptian light bulbs that the Egyptians possibly had that they had to light it's a beautiful show. And then the guy went in there with a lighter and it wouldn't even light, so he's like, well, you know, they had to have something going on with, you know, electricity to even see down here with a bulb. And then the Baghdad battery and all that stuff. It's a great show. I'm finishing the first season. I have the second season. I have to get into that. I don't even know what the second season touches base on, but I have it ready.
Yeah, they got it on Watch Instantly on Netflix. They have the whole, both seasons.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's funny.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's funny, when I watch those shows, I know a lot of those people. So it's like, oh, yeah, I know that guy, and I know that guy, and, oh, yeah, him, and her, and he and Lisa talk about that. It's like, oh, yeah, we were at the conference with him, talking with him, you know?
Yeah, we're like, we've interviewed him, haven't interviewed him, want to interview him. It's cool to sit there and be like, hey, I have to chill with these dudes.
Yeah,
pretty nice. But yeah, so has anyone caught, what's, as far as movies and series, I know Steven Spielberg and J.J. Abrams did Super 8, which it was good, but I was kind of disappointed. The alien was like this crabby grandpa that like ate policemen, but was nice to kids. So it wasn't like E.T. Then, of course, there's Fallen Skies. I have those. I haven't watched them yet. It's the basic aliens are coming.
Paul just cracked me the hell up. I really love that show. It's just really funny. But, there's...
Cowboys and Aliens is coming out soon. That's going to be a fun one.
There's a lot of alien stuff, and it's kind of half and half, I think. I think there's some kind of war going on. The people that want to control try to make it scary, and who knows, maybe the government will try to use that to scare people and giving up more of their rights. But then there's some of them that do other stuff, you know? It's like, well, what in the world? I know there's just about everything that's on the movies now are aliens or ghosts or something like that, and I think there's a reason for it. I really do.
Yeah.
So
Paul was excellent. I thought it was great compared to like Battle for Los Angeles, which just totally sucked.
Oh my God,
those were
terrible.
It was like aluminum foil coat hanger UFOs coming to get us.
Yeah, I know. They're just silly.
Like, what kind of trash is this? Paul was excellent.
What was that other one? There were two movies that came out almost the same time that were basically the same.
Skyline.
I loved Skyline. I loved that movie.
That movie to me was terrible.
Didn't it leave the apartment hardly?
I couldn't wipe the smile off my face.
A lot of people hated Skyline. I haven't even watched it. I heard so much bad crap about it, I didn't even watch it. And then Guy comes out talking about he loved it. What were you smoking during it?
No, dude, I swear to God. Hey, the Battle of Los Angeles, did you watch? Are you talking about the knockoff movie?
Or it's like a real-time reality. They try to act like it's a camera shaky and it's an alien invasion. All the aliens look the same. Then the co-hanger popcorn pie a ship's come after you.
I think you watched the knockoff movie. Because there's a company now that goes around and does that. Like they did it for the Transformers, Battle Los Angeles, War of the Worlds, Cloverfield.
Transformers were cool. I love those movies. Were cool. I mean, they're not. They're supposed to be just entertainment, but they are like realistic. But you know what? I'll tell you, ETs are smart. These ETs are so smart. They don't need to take us over. All they have to do is just wait it out and slowly infiltrate and just work their stuff and replace us a little bit at a time with hybrids. And, you know, that's,
amen.
You know, and that's all they need to do.
They're not replacing us, you weirdo.
Well, I know, but if they wanted to, they could. And a lot of people think that's what's going on. And I honestly believe, well, I know there's different things here with different agendas. And, you know, there's kind of a war going on up there as well as down here over what's going to happen. And I believe this race, this three-dimensional reality density is important because it's like the root reality. If you damage the roots, it kills the rest of the tree. So what happens here, I believe, is important. So that's why all these things are interested in kind of trying to figure out what to do with us. And I think the hardest thing for the human race is going to be to accept is going to be the fact that we are the hybrids.
Yeah, we're not the top of the food chain. You know, that's what scares us, I think. You know, most people don't care about finding alien life. It's not a big deal, you know, to find microbes. You know, it's just when, you know, they can, when we're no longer, you know, top dog.
When
you're going to start seeing.
Smarter than we are, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to start seeing some pushback. You know, they're going to want. You know, you're going to see the torches and the pitchforks come out, essentially.
Well, yeah, that's fear. But here's the thing: we have to understand we're a very young race. You know, and we are hybrids. You know, scientists are now figuring out that what they used to think is junk DNA isn't. It's alien DNA. I mean. These top scientists are finally admitting there's something going on here. So, you know, just because we're a young race doesn't mean we're stupid. It just means we have to learn and we have to evolve, just like everything else that's out there. So I believe this crossroads that we're at, I think everything that evolves has to go through this. And once, if we can make it past this and become enlightened, then we get to join the neighborhood. If we don't, just by nature, we self-destruct. Because if you're a real evil race and you reach a certain point, you reach a point where you become, you know, advanced enough to have weapons that will wipe out everything. And
listen,
if you're evil, then you basically you self-destruct.
Listen, the human race is nowhere near that place to be where we're gonna, you know, join the galactic community or whatever. Nowhere near that.
Yeah.
We don't deserve it right now.
No, we're too young.
Oh God, look what we do to each other, man. Just
yeah.
look what families do to each other, just on a personal level that you don't see on the news. Just all this, horrible stuff. I mean, there's a lot of love and everything too, but you know, inside people's houses there is there's a lot of bad stuff, you know. And Christians,
bigotry,
you know,
bigotry itself. I mean, how are we going to accept you know, things from different worlds or different dimensions? We can't even accept our neighbor because of a different color or a different religion.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, it's just, and the superstition that's in the, that everybody carries around with them. And, honestly believe, you know, until we are not, you know, looking at money, everything revolves around money, until that is no longer the prevailing you know, thing that we do, then nothing's going to happen.
Well, I think that's going to change soon. I think money's not going to be worth anything. So that
yeah, I know. You know what I mean? Yeah, like it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be trading.
trading,
you know,
juice
trade
for food.
Yeah, man. Hey, big boy.
Give me some of them pork chops. I got some geese.
Yeah.
You gotta stock up on water, honey, because I'm just giving out water.
Yeah, water's going to be the commodity. Water and food. Those are going to be the commodities. You know, what's amazing is... Go ahead.
Well, I mean, even if the dollar's going to drop and that goes... goes to crap. What are they going to do? I mean, they're going to try to, like, I mean, I just don't understand it. How do you think the government's going to react once it goes to the toilet?
They're going to create martial law. They're going to try to control everything. The world's going to collapse economy-wise. I mean, it's bound to happen because, you know, you got these evil, greedy bankers, you know, like Chase Bank and all those other ones. And they keep, you know, getting more money to fill their pockets and not doing what they're supposed to help. And it's going to all collapse. And those are the ones that are going to suffer the most, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, they should not have bailed out the banks. They should have let them fall.
Absolutely.
Because they're already doing the same stuff all over again. I mean, it's just like nothing is going to change. Stop bailing them out. And the economy did collapse. It was a global collapse. Iceland kind of went bankrupt. I mean, everywhere was affected. I mean, everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what happens in a global economy. It's not just one country going to go down. It's everybody going to go. And it's not
You know, who's going to survive the most are the poor people, so we're going to do okay.
Yeah, we're used to struggling.
There you go.
I mean, yep. Lisa's a farm girl. I mean, they live off the land, so, you know, it's nothing new.
I don't want pigs in my backyard, but I can have them.
Yeah. There you go.
So do you think that the alien beings and stuff that you have contact with, that as far as on a global scale, they have, like, it's like Star Trek Prime Directive, they can't intervene, like we would like for them to, that they just can, like, try to wake us up and push us away?
Yeah, we have to wake up first, and that's exactly, whoever did Star Trek, believe it or not, he did a lot of research. He had connections with the UFO guys, and most of the stuff he got, the concepts he got with the Prime Directive, really he got from, like, J. Allen Hynek and, you know, whoever was, you know, around at that time. But yeah, you know, they do, the good guys at least, have rules. They can't get involved. They can, you know, they can suggest, they can, you know, kind of give you a direction, I guess, but they can't get physically involved. You know, they can hint around at things and say, I'd probably go that way, but that's all we can tell you. Because then we don't grow up on our own. We have to learn on our own. We have to do this on our own. That's the key. You know, everybody wants help. Everybody's saying, well, the ETs are here to help us. Man, you can't ask for help. Because if you ask for help, then it screws up the whole system. I mean,
yeah, you're essentially surrendering yourself to someone else. It's like the it's another form of fundamentalism. It's just like you know, religion. I mean, these people surrender themselves and give themselves to God, and to, you know, everything's up to God and God does everything, and it's not some whatever, you know. People have to understand that they've been doing that for 10,000 years or whatever.
If the human race understood who they really are, they wouldn't have a problem. They'd understand if they could take control and responsibility for who they are and stop being so scared all the time, it would change everything. but we have to do it together. It's not, you know, it's not hate your neighbor and this, hate your neighbor that. And it's all about fear, too. Why are people so freaked out about not having money? Because they're afraid they're not going to be able to survive. They're afraid they're not going to be able to feed their family, and what happens if they get sick, and blah, blah, blah. I got to have more money, and, you know, this.
We're a fear-based society. I mean, we are. Almost every decision we make in life is based on some sort of fear response.
That's because of these controllers, be it off-world, on-world. They've used that against us and trained us so much that, you know, again, what we perceive, we make come true. What we believe in, we manifest, is what I was trying to think of, and because of this amazing ability. And this connection to source is a real big deal. And, you know, with remote viewing, one of the interesting things, have you ever seen that movie, Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A kind of a hokey movie, but I know the
reason. Lynn Buchanan
and the Admiral guy, what's his name?
John Alexander.
We know those people. That movie was about real people with real experiences involved with military psychic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Lynn Buchanan were talking. I said, what's your take on this alien thing? He goes, well, the government has four classifications for aliens. Aliens that like us that are not psychic. Aliens that like us that are psychic. Aliens that don't like us that are not psychic. And aliens that don't like us that are psychic. And we were talking. I said, well, why? The aliens that are psychic, why don't the ones that don't like us, why don't they like us? He said, because they're afraid of us. And I go, I'm confused. I mean, they're so much more advanced. He goes, no, you don't understand. Humans have this amazing ability, this amazing connection. And I had him explain. He goes, well, we are very limited in our psychic ability because we're kind of new at it. It's like, okay, I don't understand. He goes, well, remote viewing is a good example. We can psychically remote view things all the way across the universe and all the way across these very long distances. We're not very efficient at it, and we're kind of new at it. These beings who are efficient at being psychic and are very good at it because they can communicate can only do it short distances. So they're afraid that once we develop this ability, we'll be able to pretty much take over everything because we'll be able to communicate these extremely long distances. And that's where this connection to source comes in handy and this ability to change quantum reality. So humans, the human race needs to understand who they are, really, and get out of the ego-based stuff and stop being angry and, you know, hating each other. Warlike is silly. It's defeating who we are. And
yeah, but that's what we are.
No, it's not.
We were trained to be that.
It's society.
We have been that way since day one, since we got upright and started carrying spears and grouping together, we've been at war with one another.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's who we really are. I think that's who we were trained to be.
Off course. I don't think it's what we're supposed to be. I think it's us screwing it up, if anything. But how long do we got, Guy? We're almost at the end here, aren't we?
Yeah, we got about, I think, like 8 minutes.
Okay, yeah, all my clocks say different times. And
nope,
like,
we got 4 minutes. 4 minutes.
Oh, 4 minutes. Well, first off, I just want to say me and Guy are going to be on Universal Truth Evolution Tuesday at 12:30 Pacific, California, with Jerry Avalos. It'll be our second radio show appearance together that we're doing. We'll be holding hands during it, and we'll be talking about and it's the third show in our anti-fruitopia crusade.
You know,
so,
Jeff.
it's a big one, so I've been on there before. Jerry's pretty cool. He listens to Tools, so good guy. Stan, your site is still stanromanek.com, right?
Yep. Still, I'm trying to get it kind of a little bit more updated, but it's still there. If you're interested in knowing about when the books are going to be out or where I'm going to speak next, you can go there. I'm going to be speaking, and Lisa's going to be there, and probably I'm going to try to get her to kind of do the presentation with me. She's still a little nervous. I think she did really well for her first time on the radio. So
yeah, she did great, man.
She did great. That's what I was going to say. We broke her Goo channel a little tonight.
Yay.
So, but, that was funny.
You know, that's one of the things I like about Lisa. When we were having all this stuff with those other guys, you know, she – and there was a lot of things being thrown around. You know, you kept your head and you you were diplomatic and you didn't freak out. And, you know, like when people were questioning you, you weren't, you know, screaming your head off and calling them disinfo agents and everything like that. You were – you're very poised. It was very impressive.
Well, thank you.
Dan, you're a lucky man.
I am, because I'm not always poised and she calms me down.
No,
so.
He definitely is not.
Like, I'd rather hit first and talk later.
You know, she totally corrected you like 10 times in this interview.
Absolutely. And she always does that. That's what makes it funny to people.
It's like, no, that's not how it went.
I can't have her in the front of the audience when I'm doing my lectures because she'll stand up and say, "You were wrong."
Yeah.
Then I get totally thrown off guard. It's like,
fail.
I can't do this anymore.
Well,
confused.
He was doing a presentation. He kept going on about when Osama bin Laden was captured and killed. It's like, no, it was Saddam Hussein. Osama bin Laden. I mean, we were going back and forth, and it finally clicked in his head. I'm an idiot. Saddam Hussein.
It was Saddam Hussein. Yeah.
You know.
Oh.
And you know, you're always wrong, even if you're right. So, just
learn it, live it, get on with it.
It's going to be our 9-year anniversary, and that's why we've been together as long as we have. I've learned that she's the boss, and I just only think I am.
Just smile and nod, Ben. Just stand. Just smile and nod. Just whatever she says.
All
right, guys. We got about 45 seconds. You got some books coming out?
Yeah.
Yep.
Where are they coming out? September? Oh, the documentary. That's coming out real soon, too. And that just got finished, right?
No, we had some contract problems.
45 seconds, honey.
And, yep, it's fixed, and they're going to start shooting in September. And hopefully it'll be out soon. So,
all right, guys. Lisa and Stan Romanek, personal friends and friends of the show. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we'll be in touch, of course. And thanks for coming on. It's always great. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah, have a nice.
Thank you very much, guys.
Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.